Brendan.
Welcome, Billy Prophet.
Oh, to the podcast. I was expert, and we both decided, well, I know how to start the podcast.
Billy, thank you so much for joining us. I gotta, you know, we've all been long-term friends and acquaintances and collaborators, and it's wonderful to have you on and pick your brain on the silly things that we talk about. Silly, but actually really important.
First guest, first Convergence guest.
You're our first guest. We've been going for a year now, and
so honored. And I was, and yes, collaborators and friends. And I just, to both of you, and obviously Brendan, I met you first and met Mark through Brendan, but people in my life know both of you by name because of how integral you were to a really scary, hard moment in my life and the courage and strength that you both showed for the world that you want to live in. So thank you.
Heart shapes, heart shapes.
We're holding up heart shapes to the camera. That's what that pause was.
Yeah, silent heart shapes.
Oh, that's a band name.
Silent heart shapes.
Oh, silent heart shapes?
Circa 1987, yes.
So Billy, one of the reasons why I was thinking about having you on, at least right now, is... As the listener of the podcast will know, I've been very obsessed with fasting lately and loving to experiment with it. And we'll get into my current experiment, I'm sure. And I owe my recent dive into it to you. You shared with me the Dr. Gymnotus video, which really just helped. Get into something, the way that I need to get into it, at least health-wise, is knowing the science behind it, knowing the pathways and the logic and all the bits and pieces. And that video just so clearly illustrated to me and helped me understand how it all works and why it's all important. I had a friend, Sean, back in early 2000s, who was trying to get me into it and get me into fasting, because he did a movie project where he was the subject of a documentary doing a fast for 30 days. And he made it like, I think he made it like 18, 20 some days and had to bail out. But he had like no body fat on him already. Like he didn't need to do a 30 day fast. and then, you know, he would outside of that also tell me the benefits of it. And that didn't really quite click. And I also in the early 2000s, I tried a juice fast, which was a crazy phase. I was so backwards. but yeah, I just wanted to...
Yeah, Brendan, what were you thinking, juice?
I mean, I was...
Listener, I don't know.
Following... I was just a lemming. I was just like, oh, we're doing this now? Cool. Raw food vegan? Sure, why not? Like...
It really is like that.
Yeah. Yeah. All those crazes. I knew that the... food was the answer. I knew I was doing something wrong with food. And so many people had so many different opinions and options and stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, let's try this out. Let's see if this works. And no, of course. They all failed so bad.
Yeah, trial and error often becomes, it's amazing for how similar our human bodies are for how actually
so
different.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That's something, that's a part that's really boggling my mind of how similar they are and how different they are, especially around fasting. Like I'm learning so much about the differences for men and women about fasting. And yeah, that is super like mind blowing and hard to wrap my head around.
Yeah. We have so many, I feel like more complicated elements. I'm from a very hippie family in California. So my mom had been doing bouts of the Master Cleanse probably since her 20s. She studied kinesiology and was very sporty and into, you know, we tried to grow a lot of what we ate. We only bought from local farmers. My mom was always very curated on what we ingested and just how evil sugar is, unless it's coming with fiber in the natural way fruit is seasonally meant to be consumed. So to me, it was annoying. It was like, oh, my mom, enough.
yeah.
And then in my 20s, A friend of mine had blown out her knee, and I had as well. Mm. We met after both of us. Yeah. And she was doing the Master Cleanse to try to rebuild her joint tissue. And I was like, I'm sorry, this weird thing my mom does? What are you talking about? And she explained that when you digestion takes up most of your energy, and when you stop that and give your body the time, the space, the resources it needs to heal, which also, of course, sleep is the best thing, which we're all short on. Me particularly today. I apologize if my trains of thought roll off the tracks. Please just bring me back.
That's perfect for this podcast.
But she started explaining to me that she was doing it to rebuild, and I opted no surgery for the reasons I was allowed to, because I had micro tears, whereas hers was worse. Anyway, that's when I started going, oh, there's something really to this. Hmm. And food always was, with how chaotic my childhood was and how much travel was involved and weird cultures and weird food, food became this instant gratification for me. So I really, when I was, you know, paying my own bills and in my own grocery bills and what, and balancing work and time and play, and I started to realize how irritating food was. It became this huge decision that exhausted me. So then I started looking into why is this so exhausting? And I wanted to do a diet simply for less decisions. It wasn't about the diet, but then in 2016, Michael Pollan, or Pollan, however you say it, he took his best-selling book and Netflix produced it into a four-part series called Cooked. And the opening, it follows human evolution. If you haven't seen it, I can't recommend it enough. It follows the human evolution of our brain from animal-like to who we are now, and how our nutrition is what separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom. So it follows the elements in the ways that human evolution began to cook. So first was fire, then was water, earth and air. I think there's fermentation and or agriculture and fermentation. I can't remember. I haven't seen it in a bit. Sure. But the opening one about fire, he talks about this obsession that people have with food and how no matter what, we keep coming back to it. Exactly like you said, you know it's food, but what is it about food? He couldn't put his finger on it into this deep dive. And he then, of course, went on to do the same thing with drugs, like Schedule One drugs. And that became How to Change Your Mind. Mm. But Cooked is from 2016. So then this weight was lifted off my shoulders. Like, oh, I'm not the only one being driven crazy by this simple thing, food.
Yeah.
No, and
it's universal.
Thank you. And that really started to change my relationship with it. And I started questioning. So I read Dr. Jeanine Roth, Women, Food, and God, and started looking at the spirituality, food as medicine, what additives, the preservatives, the GMOs, the way we grow, all the things my mom was preaching to me as a toddler all of a sudden made sense. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine in Ventura, California, sent me the Galen Institute's YouTube series that I started getting into and then sent on to you. And now it just makes sense.
So, okay. I want to put a pin in all that and come back to that because that's the main topic. But you said something that really has also been on my mind, but, and I don't know if we're going to come up with an answer for this, but so your mom was on the right track and trying to give you all of this wisdom and set you up correctly and everything. And it reminds me of how Unique's parents also tried to do the same. Unique Hammond is my health coach. Her parents tried to do the same thing for her. But then, like, both of you seem to, like, hit the rebellious phase and want to go explore and then just kind of lost it. And you know, for Unique, she lost it so much into a point that she developed Crohn's disease and had to and her path, she found the Bean Protocol and that helped heal, you know, reverse her Crohn's disease. And for you, you needed to find it to heal your leg and other things. And I'm wondering as I'm working to have my own child, how do I provide the good basis for nutrition for them as a kid? And then, you know, I don't want to prevent them from having the freedom to explore, you know, whatever they need to, but not make it so that they want to, like, that they don't understand it or that they have to rebel against it and hate it, you know? Or do you get what I'm trying to say?
I do. And I have a, I have an answer that I'm sure people aren't gonna like.
Ooh, tell me. Ooh, I love that.
Maybe parents wouldn't. For me, I call it the God line. It's the North Star. It's, we all have a purpose here. And where I lost my God line in my own life was really simple. And it's that I come from a WASPy family, where as like forward thinking and hippie and California heathen as we are, we don't have conversations. It was the lack of discussion that pushed me toward thinking I could figure out for myself better than what I was being told. It was the idea of do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah. Now,
I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. I love, adore both of my parents. We have really different relationships. They're still married 40 odd years later. And that's incredible considering I've called off 6 weddings now. So the biggest thing my dad always says about parenting for the three of us, he's like, I always gave my kids enough rope to hang themselves. And I was close enough by with a chair when you did. And that hands-off approach was, I mean, A, how I blew out my knee. but it's really important. If you've ever read Khalil Gibran's The Prophet, there's if I had my way, The Prophet would be more read than the Bible in the world, because it's a very distilled, simple version of the Bible. It's a tiny book with 1 or 2 page chapters. And there's a chapter on children. And pardon my paraphrasing, it essentially says, your children are not your children. They come through you, but not from you. You may give them your thoughts, but they have their own thoughts. And they dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams.
Dang. So
it's
I love that, but also heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it is. In Christian values, they say the biggest sacrifice a woman can make is her child, because she's giving them up to the world. And I think that's true for either parent. It's just that fathers have different relationships with their children, especially at a young age.
Yeah.
So, but to sacrifice your child, to scrape their knees and their face and bleed and hurt and cry, that's to live. And to respect their sovereignty, that they're going to have their own God mind, their own relationship with the oneness, their own purpose or blueprint, whatever it is that you want to call it, with source. I can't imagine what it would be like to be a parent of an addict. Mm-hmm. You know, where is the line between supporting someone in healthy ways and enabling them in unhealthy ways?
Yeah.
So as I moved through the Grief Recovery Institute work, I refound that God line. And my relationship to food changed, because my relationship to everything else changed when I started to heal all of these. And you and I both do TBM work. So very in line with that, right? Shadow work, if we call it shadow. Mm-hmm. So much in the, what's the word I'm looking for? Post-colonial, predominantly white societies that we live in, there is a misunderstanding and an isolation of grief, which usually grows into the shadow. Yeah. And if you look at Hindu history, we carry 7 generations of what they call karma. If you go into biblical Christian beliefs, they call it generational sin. And if you read Mark Wallin's It Didn't Start With You, or Dr. Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score, we're now proving 5 to 7 generations of cellular
epigenetic
trauma that we are passing on. So there are behaviors we carry that aren't even about us. So all these religions, for me, God is just where science hits faith. Right. It's the what you believe is there. And then we're getting to the point in science to prove it. But it was there all the time.
Yeah.
And when you connect with that inside yourself, you're answering all your questions. So that was a long winded way of saying, I apologize.
Talk to your kids.
Yes. And not even talk to them. Ask questions.
Yeah.
Like, I was never asked how I felt about something or what it was that I desired. I was told.
Yeah.
And, you know, to this day, even if I voice something really specific, it goes unheard. And maybe that's because I'm the third child and the baby or the only girl. There's all these dynamics that go into it, right? But the biggest thing I would say for all of the chaos I've created in my own life, a lot of times, most of the time unconsciously, because you both know me very consciously, I'm very love focused, unity focused. Yeah. And yet look at the messes I've made. It really has been lack of, because I didn't have conversations or discussions or that open, safe space to exchange energies, I internalized it and didn't have those conversations with myself because I didn't know how to. And that's food,
wisdom.
Food is the most integral. It's such a hard addiction to identify because you need it to survive.
Yep.
But it can tip over.
Yep.
You don't need alcohol to survive or drug. You know what I mean? Like there's food is a really gray area and you have to be clear on your relationship with it.
Yeah. I couldn't co-sign that more. Like I've been in and out of this addiction recovery program called Refuge Recovery, which I really like. It's based on, it's like an alternate to the 12 steps. It's based on Buddhism and it resonates way more for me than AA. And some other, like I tried SMART and a few others and they were all not for me. But this one resonated. And every time I would go, like I am not an addict to alcohol or drugs or other things. And I can so deeply to my core feel that I'm an addict for food and different types of foods. And I go to these meetings and like, I feel outsider myself, like nobody else is like, should you even be here at all? But I being there, I'm like, well, you know, my thing is food. I overeat, I eat sugar. Am I welcome here? And they're all like, yes. And I'm still like, but I don't know. Like, it's like, you guys all have bigger problems. You know, like I diminish how much it affects me, even though it affects me greatly. But yeah, it's hard to accept that within oneself, that food can be a problem and addictive because we need it to survive.
Exactly. I was gonna say, even the awareness that something is out of balance because it's so hard to see. I almost brought this up earlier, but I was like, I'm already on too many tangents. But the book I'm reading right now is The Perfectionist Guide to Losing Control by Catherine Morgan Schaffler.
Ooh, that sounds
and
like
in all honesty, it is geared more toward most of her clients are female.
Sure.
But I think I even recorded it because it starkly hit me so much about perfectionism in men and how it's even harder for men.
Yeah.
Because in the patriarchy, it is essentially a blanket of perfection expected. That does not mean your behavior is expected to be exemplary. No, that's not what she's talking about. What she's talking about is the alpha man. You're not allowed to show any vulnerability or any of these elements that are actually very healthy.
Yeah.
And so she comes at men in a very empathetic approach, which is you're on this perch of patriarchal power, which you're really being forced into a toxic version of perfectionism. This is what society deems a perfect male, and it's so toxic that you can never live up to it. Basically, there's a test you can take online that is, there are five types of perfectionism and the way they manifest in different ways. And seasonally in your life, across your life, or even across the year, you can ebb and flow into different tendencies and the way they show up. But coming back to what you said about you talking yourself out of, do you have a place at this table or do you belong to this community? That goes back to, you know, you're God mine. You know your purpose in the world, and you know if your energy is moving toward that light and that purpose, or if it's being scattered by all the things that can be scattered, whether that's addiction or lack of healthy boundaries, all the things that bleed away,
right?
You know, societal expectations or shadow work that has yet to be done, unresolved grief, all these things where there's little holes poked in your energy cup and it starts to just diminish you.
Yeah.
And so if you feel that there are sieve elements to your relationship at all across your life, but particularly with food, of course you have a place in that space.
It feels like it's less about the quality, and I don't mean like it's about the effect that the thing has on you, not the potency of the thing to which you are addicted, if you know what I mean. Like,
yes,
that's what qualifies you. That's what gets you in the door, is the fact that your biology, your makeup, your whatever means you're predisposed to react to this stimulus in a particular way, and it's that reaction that is the problem. It doesn't matter whether it's heroin or biscuits. If not having heroin or biscuits causes you to have a major reaction, or it's so difficult to give them up, then that's the thing that needs treating, and that should be across the board. It shouldn't matter what you're addicted to, because it's the addiction itself that you want to treat.
My mother-in-law makes 3-ingredient biscuits, and they are so freaking good. It's incredible.
Heroin in them.
It's heroin. Yeah. One of the ingredients is heroin.
Yeah.
So I'm on currently on day 7 of an 18-day fast.
Wow.
And yeah. I mean, it's a soft goal of fasting until Christmas morning.
You'll manage one slice of turkey and then you'll just throw it up.
No, I don't think so. if my track record is to go on, I'm gonna eat a massive meal with no like bone broth beforehand or anything, and just dive right back in and be fine.
That's my boy.
Oh no. No, it's an empty stomach waiting to be filled. Yeah, and like so yeah, it's a soft goal. Like I'll stop if I feel sick or anything, and I know my body well enough now to like, I'm not seeing a doctor having any guidance with this. Like I've been doing this for years and I feel very in tuned with my signals and everything. And I've started many like intentionally being like a 5-day fast and quit on day 4, or a 7-day fast and quit on day 5 because of those body signals. And so I feel confident in that. And
in your awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I feel like, once I eat, it's like immediately I'm like, okay, all the symptoms are gone. It's like perfectly fine. My body's just like, no, actually, we need to eat now. And okay, cool. I can hear that. The reason for the 18 days or and Christmas is just because that's going to be my next family meal. That's the next like occasion that we're getting together on. And it's like, well, I'm not going to miss that. Like, there's no point in having a longer fast than that. The point of gathering is to gather and eat a meal, and that's a thing. And, but then like, I still, on top of just wanting to experiment with fasting in general and just being so curious about it, I also have this stubborn belly fat and skin from when I was 300 pounds and, stretched out and inflamed. And I have this breast tissue that I want to get rid of. And like, you know, just fat stores all over my body. And I want to tighten that up. I want to look fucking great for my 40th birthday. Like, I want to look the best I ever have when I have all of my friends and some of my family around to gather and dance. Like, I couldn't. That's my goal. It's like, so I heard this great analogy about fasting and eating, is that we're all cars and we need to go to the gas station to fill up our car. And so, you know, we have a meal, we fill up our tank. And then we have an extra little roll and we have a slice of cake for dessert and we have an after meal snack later on. And so we
Jerry fill cans up, in the trunk.
That's we exactly. That's, up, yeah. I just had this image of someone just like laden down with Jerry cans.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, we fill up a can. And then the next time we go to the gas station, we fill up another can. Eventually,
just in case
our trunk is full, or as you would say, our boot is full. And then our back seat is full. And then our front seat is full. And then we buy a trailer to haul even more gas cans in the back. And if we never stop going to the gas station, and even if we stop, like we realize we shouldn't keep eating, and we shouldn't keep filling up those gas cans, and we just keep going to the gas station and never not go to the gas station and realize, oh, I have all these jerry cans to use. we're never going to get through all of that, all that energy store that we have on our bodies.
What that tells me is that the what's the thing called? The gasometer, you know, the thing, the gauge.
The gauge.
As I would say, the petrol gauge is fucked because we keep like it's for one thing, it doesn't know how much gas slash petrol is available because you've got it all in fucking jerry cans everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what happens is the way my brain is seeing this anyway, is that we keep getting the warning lights flashing and the signs saying, you're out of gas, you're out of gas, you're out of gas. And
yes.
It's like, no, I've got fucking loads of it, mate. It's all around everywhere. Just look. Because we're not, you know, most of us, many of us are not either educated or habituated into it. I'm certainly not. I'm educated, but I'm not habituated at all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm still giving in, for want of a better phrase, to the signals, hearing the warning signals, bleep, 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 and going shit. Or I'm just habituated to, filling up my tank every day. But I do love the idea of doing a bit of work so that you can reset your gauges so that over time,
they
start reporting data correctly again.
No, completely. And I would say, in terms of, like, obviously, what I kind of just illustrated with how I'm stopping on Christmas is like, always stop your fast for the family meal, for the gathering with friends, for whatever, and then just start your fast again. If you like, no biggie. You're not trying to rack up the highest score for fasting days, or whatever. You know, it's like it's an ongoing practice. It never stops.
It's internal.
Yeah.
What I thought about, Mark, when you were talking about the gauge is measuring something. It's the same way politicians pool the data they want, right? So society has this gauge, but it's the same argument my father has, you know, growing up in a Methodist family, which the reason we didn't grow up in a church is because my dad doesn't believe that there should be a middleman between you and God. And that's very much how each of my parents came to be separately. My mom's family was Roman Catholic, but we did not grow up in any church or with any, there's a Bible in the house, but we don't, we read it as a piece of literature, not as a law for life. So I feel like that gauge becomes the middleman of available resources to you, right? It's saying, this is what's available and there's none left. And it doesn't realize the infinite network of oneness that you have access to. But it's, if you aren't clear on your own gauge, or what I call your God mind, then you're taking a middleman's word for it. You're letting someone else tell you.
Yeah.
Like if you're, and I'm all for being conscious of your health and yes, you know, get a physical once a year or whatever, but you know when you should be going to the doctor, you know when you should be eating.
Yeah.
And to quote my favorite line of the prophet, it is the chapter on self-knowledge. And he says, your hearts know in silence the secrets of the days and the nights. You don't need to ask anyone else. It's what is your own intention for your own life, and is the choice I'm about to make in line with it or not? So a family meal is more than just what you're eating. It's the connection.
Yeah.
It's part of the blue zones, right?
For sure.
Like it's the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So what is your main intention in the family meal?
Yeah.
Is it the scalloped potatoes with extra cheese, or is it?
Yes, it is.
Right.
God bless you, Brendan. I love you so much.
Or is it the dopamine hit that you get when that salt, fat, sugar hits your bloodstream that the scalloped potatoes provide?
Yes, it is. Yes, you're getting it. Yes.
Dopamine.
It's not to see my sister again, that's for sure.
I know the feeling.
That's me going like, no, it's about breaking bread and unity. And no, it's about potatoes.
No, it's so cute.
Mainly about potatoes.
If the firstborn in my generation never showed up, I'd be fine.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love my sister and I wish she would talk to me, but yeah.
I love my brother and wish that he would gain some self-awareness.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
Woof.
Wouldn't that be just the best? So, okay, you made an excellent point that I couldn't agree with more, that our bodies tell us what we need. But as Mark and...
Our bodies tell us what we need. I'm not going to let you cop out on butt. You're not going to negate what you just said. Uh-oh, okay. Words matter.
Fair. And as Mark and I previously discussed on the episode, the wonderful, wonderfully titled episode, Your Food is Gaslighting You, that within the body, the chemical reactions, that how our body communicates with itself is through hormones. Hormones are made from fats. And when we eat processed seed oils, when we eat processed foods, I know the shudder, yes. When we eat sugar and other things that cause chemical reactions and everything, like that tells us things that aren't true, or that are the messages that those foods and those products, those things driven for us to consume and to pay into the system, those aren't what we actually need and to our core want. And it's really hard when we're in it to differentiate, to see what the, to know if it's us speaking or our food speaking.
It's because your signaling system is screwed because of all these things. And it's a really interesting, I love this as a thought for like, you know, when I come back from seeing you all and I begin, you know, the protocol, when I begin to level one of God mode, I will be consoling myself probably at certain times, or just reminding myself that I'm feeling certain things and I'm feeling that this isn't good or this isn't working or this is difficult.
Yeah.
Because there's so much work to do to just repair the senses.
Yeah. To that point. So I'm, as I said, currently on day 7 of my fast and honestly don't feel amazing. Like I've been leading up to today, I've been feeling super great. Days 3 to 6 were really great. I was feeling calm and relaxed. Senses were heightened, especially my sense of smell, which was really fascinating. And I was feeling good. Today, it was really hard to wake up. I feel a little bit more achy and my chills within my body and stuff. Mm. And, you know, I was like, okay, is this a sign that I need to break my fast and end this thing? And I sat with it more. And tried to, you know, practice that awareness of my body and thinking about myself and what's going on. And I came to the realization, conclusion, whatever, that like I'm not in a dangerous spot. This isn't a big warning sign. This is just discomfort. I have lived in comfort. Like I have done so much, especially with food, to make myself feel comfortable for so long. I need to bring forward the awareness. It's okay to be uncomfortable. Like it's not the end of the world. I might need to say
it's somewhat necessary.
It's super necessary
because that's how growth. You recede. If you remain, you don't just stay stagnant. I think you recede, and I think I've found that over the, I don't know whether it's the last year or two. So yeah, I can sort of co-sign that, and it's difficult work.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's important to do it with company.
Yeah.
I agree, because what I've found amongst that is when the gauges are off, because too many middlemen, whether it's capitalism or societal expectation or whatever it is, it's meddling in your gauges. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It numbs out your self-trust. And so now you don't even trust. Are you achy because you're short on minerals? That could be very real. Are you achy because there were stored toxins in some fat deposits that are finally moving
most likely
through?
Most likely.
Well, but it could be either. And
yeah,
if it
could be heavy metals. Yeah.
Yes. If you have the instinct to just drink more water and purge it, get through it, and maybe even sit in the uncomfortable feelings, what's coming up? Where in your body is it hurting? I'm a huge advocate. Anytime anyone has anything, Louise Hay, Heal Your Body A to Z. or Christelle Nani's Diary of a Medical Intuitive. Mm. There are spiritual ties to all of the ailments in our body, to where they take place in our body, mm-hmm. and those can offer insight. So for example, you said aches, like muscle aches?
It's hard to say. It's just kind of like a tingling and achy sensation throughout my body. My lower back, my adrenal glands or...
So lower back, yeah. Let's start with aches and we'll go to lower back. So
sure.
Aches is the problem, the probable cause,
mm-hmm.
longing for love, longing to be held. The new thought pattern or mantra that you repeat for aches is, I love and approve of myself. I am loving and lovable.
I am loving and lovable.
Now, I love that you said lower back, because when you look up back in general represents the support of life. So the mantra is, I know that life always supports me. However, she then divides back problems into lower, middle, or upper. So lower,
mm-hmm.
probable cause, fear of money, lack of financial support.
That's super true.
All I need is always taken care of.
All I need is always taken care of.
I am safe.
I am safe.
I'll stitch these together and send them through to you. But great. Anyone, like we have a family friend who was bit by most likely a brown recluse spider.
Oof.
Went septic. He's in his early 40s. Hospital, full-blown, is it necrotic when it eats away? Skin graft.
Necrosis, yeah. Oof.
Yes. So yikes. Immediately I asked, where's the bite? Because where on your body correlates, is it the right side? Is it the left side? You know, left is female receptivity, left is masculine, giving out, letting go, the father, left being the mother. What dis-ease is in your life that is correlating in your body is giving you the signals to. Mm. So with him, they couldn't tell me where the bite was. He was in the hospital. Like I couldn't, but I just immediately went, okay, skin, it's a skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does skin represent? Bites. It was an insect bite. What does that represent? Like I just stitched it together, sent it over for his mom to have.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, if you get more specific with me, we'll break it down. And usually when I do this with friends and uh-huh. I ask for symptoms, I do my little, I'll cut everything out and stitch it so that you only see the ones that you need. And usually immediately they point to, it's that one. But it's not until it's put out. There's also an incredible doctor that has a really fun test online. Her name's Dr. Laura Gray. And it's this fun little almost game. It's a visual test on the screen of your computer. And it will immediately point to what's going on in your nervous system, your body energy. And at first when I did it, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like it's not my, and I can't remember what it was that mine came up as. Mm-hmm. And then when I started reading it and actually journaling in my TBM journal about it,
uh-huh.
it was spot on.
Wow.
I'm gonna open the door to skeptical Mark.
Please.
Perfect.
Because he's banging down the door. Because I may have missed a connection here. But we're talking about something external, you know, in the example of the bite, something external being, you know, a toxin, a poison. I don't know why I said poison in a weird way. A toxin,
it's
a poison.
It's very accurate.
Poison. Yeah. Poison. Entering the body and then you're then being able to identify what is psychologically wrong. And there is a connection there that heals the poison? What's happening there?
So it is not the accident or issue or ailment that you attracted, which it actually is if you want to get spiritual on it.
There's no free will.
You do attract.
Yeah, but the spider has it. Anyway, yeah, go.
Agreed. But it is your response, or a lot of times in the body's case, reaction to.
Okay.
So for example, bites, she has listed, and then so bites mean that you, so probable cause, bite, fear, open to every slight. So that's the energy that leaves you open to getting bit. And then the new thought pattern, I forgive myself and I love myself now and forevermore. Then she divides bites down into, was it an animal or an insect? An animal bite that you've attracted is anger turned inward, a need for punishment. New thought process, I am free. However, with an insect, the probable cause is guilt over small things. New thought process, I am free of all irritations, all is well. So again, it's that the intention that you are attracting a situation that will highlight the energy you are carrying.
So I got accused of ChatGPT got accused of this, or I got accused of it via a ChatGPT thing, and there was a name for it, and I'm going to forget the name. But it's the attribution of statements that are actually quite broad that feel like they apply directly to you, and those to me, like they feel like that's that kind of thing where you could. Depending on how you word it or how you view it, like I feel like they could apply to anyone. Like, this is the one where, you know, I'm meeting up against the skepticism, and maybe in 6 months' time I'll be fully there. But you know, that's the bit I still have this difficulty sort of with. I do not in any way can I believe that. Because I have a fear of authority, that means that makes it more likely that a spider is going to bite me.
Someone commented in the LinkedIn post that I mentioned earlier, when you posted what ChatGPT said, Yes. And I was reading it going, oh, I should ask the same question because okay. I feel guilty of the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. That the attribution or seeing, it's the reflection, seeing mm-hmm. yourself in. And before I could, because I'm not much of a LinkedIn commenter, someone else had already commented, yeah. I feel this is accurate for me as well. And I was like, oh, okay, it isn't just me. Mm-hmm. So I hear what you're saying entirely. It's like astrology for me, it's not about horoscopes or like future reading. It's just a map of the universe and mm-hmm. the patterns of energy that we're in. Or if anyone has read The Fourth Turning. Yeah. They measure all major wars throughout society and essentially the seasons of human societies follow the seasons, spring, summer, autumn, winter. And we are in the fourth turning right now. So if you study that in a scientific way and all the major wars from they go back to like ancient Greece, it's such a cool book. I'm rereading it right now for the first time since I was 16.
Oh,
because
wow.
We are now in the fourth turning.
Yeah.
Now, that is scientific, right? They literally follow dates of each war. They explain statistics. What I would call that is welcome to Pluto and Aquarius.
Uh-huh.
All that is the map of the universe lining up with these energies. Does that go back to the Greek myth of Hades kidnapping Mother Nature's daughter, Penelope, and her eating a pomegranate? Like, yes. However, if you look at the science of it, the last time we were in the energy that we have just entered fully this year, we just the tipped Pluto into Aquarius for about 3 months, March of 2023. And in that weird little span, an absorbent number of billionaires died. If you go back, it was when the Titanic squish, that happened. There was a billionaire from Chicago racing like Formula One and he crashed. There were all these very powerful people that died in that 3 month span. And then Pluto went back into Capricorn. Well, what is Capricorn? Pluto, by the way, represents the underworld, death and rebirth. It's very painful. It's very dark. It's all the things under the surface. So Pluto moved into Capricorn mid 2008. The rest of the world calls it the GFC. We Americans like to call it the housing crisis or the house market crash, whatever. Yeah. But GFC for short, right? So the goat is, Capricorn is the goat. The mountain goat, they love to climb big. They want big, sturdy. They want it to be shown. And so what is the dark side of that? Well, greed, grabs for power, huge governmental power or control over others, huge corporations. So when Pluto, what is normally underneath, moves into Capricorn, you start getting the darkness of that sign. It started exposing, so from 2008 to now, it started exposing the dangers of greed, which was apparent in politics and big pharma and big agriculture, right? Mm-hmm. So now we're moving into Aquarius. Well, Aquarius is, as they joke, the age of Aquarius is the dawning of a new day. It is all about unity, community, spreading power. The dark side of Aquarius is if you don't want to get on board with the greater good and be part of the unity, we're going to burn it down.
Guillotine, motherfuckers.
Which brings me exactly to what I was mentioning the fourth turning for. So the last time Pluto was in Aquarius was about 250 years ago. And first the American Revolution took place, and then the French Revolution took place. And then we had the, I don't know when exactly the Industrial Revolution starts, but it's not long after. It's invention and newness, and it is the division of power. The last time we were in these energies, we overthrew monarchies. I mean, not where you're from, Mark, but you know. But we as Yates.
I was the overthrown, yes.
We as Yates said, we're not going to wear your crown anymore. We believe in the Republic. We believe in democracy. And even
thank God you did, because otherwise we wouldn't have Hamilton.
And so many other things. But
so many other things.
So many other things. But so for me, astrology is not, I'm not looking for a fortune to be told. I'm simply what's the energy historically? Yeah. Because I don't want to be swimming against the stream at all, let alone a tidal wave that's coming. I would rather be, how can we do this smarter, not harder?
Yeah. Yeah.
At this point, I'm just like, how do I survive? How do I turn on and not get, you know, cast away? You know, it's weird how like lost, and Brendan and I have talked about this, how lost I've felt, I think, for the last 18 months. I mean, I don't know if we've been talking about it for 18 months, but I've sort of been in that search for something for so long, because, and we have talked a little bit about my sense that, you know, I might not have, like, I don't believe I have an infinitely long career in terms of just the things that I do for the people that I do it. As you were talking about sort of not overthrowing governments, but as you were talking about the sort of Industrial Revolution, you know, in my mind there's those two little letters, A and I.
Of course.
And the fact that ChatGPT-5, just as one example, is apparently ready to go. And I can't speak to the accuracy, it was just an image and it was on TikTok. It was a graph showing the difference in size of model, which basically means how much it can understand.
How much it can steal from us as creators.
Yes.
I mean that as humans. Every human is a creator.
Yes. I'm not necessarily talking about the amount of information it can store, but the amount of information it can process and the amount of understanding it has. So not the knowledge, because the knowledge, it's slurped all of that up already. But it's the ability to connect ideas and those kinds of things. The difference between 4 and 5 is several orders of magnitude. It's like the difference between a golf ball and basketball. And it's a huge leap. And it's very nearly here. And we have also things like agentic AI, which is essentially, we're getting computers to drive our own computers now. You know, we can say, like, you know, I had to do my ESTA application for entry into the US a couple of days ago. And it was, I mean, your like American forms are always, I feel so bad for you guys. Like, you have such, like, the people who make your websites, they punish you. It seems like they make things difficult.
Well, wait till you get in the legal system, Mark.
No, I shan't. I don't want to do that. It was fine. But like next year, I could be saying
to ChatGPT or whatever, go fill out my Esther and let me know when you need a photo of my face, you know, or you need a snapshot of my passport or whatever it is. Like, go and do all the other stuff that you know about me and just beep, 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 and, you know, and it can read the page in a fraction of a second and act. Brendan, you and I have been on record as saying there is no point, like, standing in the path of progress in as much as we can have sympathy, not even sympathy, but empathy for the artist and the creator whose work has been stolen and used to formulate these systems. And I'm also... I would be happy to see those companies who stole content get sued into oblivion, or at least sued so much that, you know, it there is some form of reparation or something.
I have two small things that I want to get back to, Mark, on your skepticism and the wonderful skepticism that you bring to this conversation and always on the skepticism of the interconnectedness of everything. And how things outside of you could affect you.
Okay, you
have a clarification.
Sort of sort of clear on that point. Like,
yeah,
all you have to say to me is like, Mark, how do magnets work? And it's like, I don't know. So that as a you know, as a macrocosm for, you know, whether, you know, astrology or whatever, like I can sit still for that because you know, we're talking about forces there that we can't see and they have this thing. It's like, yeah, someone could give you a scientific explanation of magnetism, but you can still go, yeah, but why though? You know what I mean? And so it can be the same with astrology. It's like, yeah, you can. Yeah. And so we both ultimately end up with the same question of, yeah, but why though? And so that's fine. I'm good with that. And this is just a thought that's occurring to me now as we talk about this. There is what I'm going to call a sense of, which I'm sure I haven't coined it, like human supremacy. You know, we have white supremacy and whatever. Somehow we attract the, like, a spider doesn't have, I don't know, like, I'm trying to connect and see if you will excuse the allusion, the pun, the web here, the connection between a, you know, okay, a spider doesn't necessarily have will, but it has motivations, you know, it runs towards safety and runs away from pain or runs away from danger.
Instinct.
Hunts for food. Instincts.
Yes. Yeah. Instincts. Yeah. It's when we get down to the level of, like, literally you call this upon yourself in that sense. I struggle with that. I don't struggle with the idea that bigger systems can have, you know, influence on us.
Sure.
Moon's tide. Sure. I can dig it. It's the last mile, if you like, the cabinet to the home of the internet fiber.
It's
that last mile that I'm struggling with.
The power of the conscious and subconscious is what you're kind of struggling with, to be able to actually attract it yourself.
Yeah, because I think I believe more in care, and it's not from a place of I don't know what I think or don't know what I believe. Like, I believe much more in randomness and in chaos.
Good. Chaos is a woman in the Bible, babe.
which, you know, and there's probably also something to the fact that, like, I'm not risk averse, but I don't like gambling because I don't have any control over it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a moral thing.
They call it intelligence.
yeah, maybe. But, like, I don't have a moral objection to it, but I don't like games of chance. And, like, someone can do that. Like, I don't really believe in, and I've been pilloried for this before. And it's probably it's either because I'm dumb or B, because I'm not explaining it right, but, or C, it's so mind blowing that the people just haven't wrapped their head around it. I sort of don't believe in probability. Like, you roll a die so many times and it will come up with certain numbers, or what's the odds? Mm-hmm. I'm like, every single time it will either happen or it won't. Like, yep. I'd have no interest or no real conception of, well, the odds are that, no.
I mean, that's just a framework. Yeah.
Because, no, it's a fair point. Because, like, you'll roll a die and it will either land on the number you expect or it won't. Like, that's it. Probability's bullshit. Anyway.
No, I get it. But so, my two things in the interconnectedness of things and how you affect other things and how other things affect you and how it's all connected. One, you haven't yet, because you will soon, you haven't yet taken really good mushrooms. And so That's going to be
a
trip.
Squeegeeing, getting my third eye ready to.
The guy swears by the same psilocybin.
Oh my God, it's incredible.
Whether it's ketamine, like he swears for his healing and for his spirituality connection. Mm-hmm. I've never done anything like that. I don't know why. Maybe because I was born in a more open-minded culture. Yeah.
You haven't needed to.
This is just how I was raised.
That to push against.
Yeah.
So, Billy, I sent something to Brendan about 10 days ago. And it's the first time I've ever done this where I set out like a long term, well, it's really not that long term in the grand scheme.
8 years.
But like, of like a trajectory to where I want to be. And it's bold and it's big and it's all.
Yep.
And a word I've been coming back to recently and I'm fascinated by is audacious.
Yes.
I've got a lot of audacity. And I think that's what separates me from a lot of.
You're such a pommy. If you were a Yank, you wouldn't call yourself that at all.
I think you're right. Because you guys deal a lot better with, and I've had this conversation before with a friend who spent some of his formative years in America. There's and I think Brendan and I might have talked about this before as well. There's such a difference in like identity. I think the example he gave was a kid could turn up in high school one day and go, "I'm a punk now." And the kids in American high school go, "Okay, I guess you're a punk now."
Yeah.
You define your destiny.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas here, we're like, prove it. Show us the credentials.
Yeah.
Have you listened to the right music? Have you got the, like, you can't, you mustn't, you simply mustn't identify until you've done the homework, you know.
In Australia, we say tall poppy syndrome.
Yes, they do, and also in New Zealand, yes.
Yes. How dare you grow taller or different than the rest of us?
Yep. Ireland has it. Like they call it having notions. Lots of cultures have it. And it's something that America doesn't. I bet there are parts of it.
The American version is, "Oh, you're into that now? Okay, we're all into this now."
We've moved on to the next thing.
Yeah. punk is dead. We're on to acid.
Disco or whatever.
Whatever. Next.
The identity, but like audacity is something that, like, because I work with a lot of people probably in either in the UK or sometimes in Europe, every now and again in America, but like the thing that I think separates me in some of the things that I do from other people is like, I don't worry that I'm not good enough yet
that Mark.
Yeah. Cause like if I'm interested in doing a good job, then I want to get better at it. And it's like, it's not courage. Cause it's not like,
it is.
That's diminishing.
I agree.
It's the audacity to say, "I reckon I can have a go at that." Like, you know, it's so many people diminish themselves by saying like, "I could never do that thing." And it's like, yeah, but what if you just were like, what if you did? You know, I have no experience of writing a kid's book. I didn't do any research apart from being a kid and reading books. And I was like, "I reckon I can do that."
Except, aside from my lived experience.
Lived experience as a child. I don't know. It's very, you know, I'm going to start a podcast hosting company. You're not supposed to do that. You're sort of not. You're not supposed to have done it the way I did it. You're supposed to, you know, seek funding and do all these various things. That's what you're supposed to do. And I sold it. And, you know, like, you're not supposed to do that. And it comes from having enough audacity to be like, "I reckon I could do that."
Which is courage.
Yeah, yes. Okay, all right, you know, fine. You call me courageous.
Briefly, before I forget it, you reminded me again with astrology to my other point to Mark about the interconnectedness of things. Billy, I loved your explanation of where Pluto's been and going, and that reminded me of something I talked with Mark about months and months ago, where the way that I have been seeing things lately and listening to way too much Alan Watts, like delightful amount of Alan Watts. And
the wisdom of insecurity. I know.
when zooming down into the body, into the cells, into the atoms, you see a nucleus with its protons and neutrons and fucking electrons zoom in around it, and they look like planets with orbiting stars. You know, they look like suns, and they look like the same thing when you zoom out super far. The same amount of times that you zoom in, you zoom out, and you see the same thing. And it's so interesting that we're right in the middle.
I was taught this by by the United Kingdom's greatest comic and one of the world's greatest comics, Billy Connolly, who happened upon this. I don't think he was much of a drugsman, and
a drugsman. Sorry.
That's quite all right. You can enjoy me. That's fine. I'm here to be enjoyed.
Honestly, you said drugsman, and it took me a minute, and then I saw this like really elegant archer, like with like different drugs of, you know, shrooms and LSD
in
and
his quiver.
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Recall him the drugsman.
He was like the Robin Hood coming to save us.
Are you looking for an upper or a downer? This is an indica. It's a great body high.
I shall shoot your heart with it.
I've got some vapes. You can blow some mad cotton. And away we go.
You were quoting him. Your drugsman.
I was quoting Billy Connolly. United Kingdom's greatest comic. Yes, he had the whole thing, and he talked about, like, and it was just a kind of a throwaway bit, but it always stuck with me about, you've been looking through the telescope the wrong way. And he just, he had this, you know, you've got to turn it the other way around. It's all the fucking same. Planets, they go around the sun. It's just like a nucleus. It's all the fucking same.
It's fucking brilliant.
And that is my spirituality. It's all the fucking same.
It's all the fucking same. Everything is everything. Oh, God, I'm going to hug you guys so much.
Soon.
Yes. All right. Should we get to the Tune Tumult?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
This is our new favorite segment where we take a prompt from the week before and write a song in a week and present it to each other.
To Billy.
Billy. And you get a judge who is best.
Now we have a barometer. Now we have a first.
Oh shit. No, they're likely to be very different and hard to compare.
That's
usually the way they are.
They will be very different. I can promise you that.
First week and the second week, there was a clear winner. And since then, there's been like, okay, we went different directions with these.
Bringing our stuff.
They're both good.
Last week, dear listener, where we left our heroes, Brendan and I talked a lot about skiing. It didn't make the episode because it was a really fucking long episode. Because there's a lot of stuff. Ski talk, because it was really just like, here's some fun shit that we're going to do when I get to Oregon. As the theme, we picked the phrase, it's all downhill from here. Brendan, would you like to, have any preamble for your song?
So this immediately came to my mind, and unlike with the hymn, I actualized exactly what I had in mind. Like, this is the vision that I had. And if I had, you know, infinite time, I would clear up some muddiness and tweak some things and whatever. But within a week, while super busy trying to finish this bathroom before you all come,
gotta have a bathroom.
Yeah, gotta have a non-big, complete mess of a construction zone as my house for the party. This is a first for our Tune Tumult in style of song. It's still very much me, but I wasn't in I wasn't initially thinking about skiing, but then the imagery of skiing came to me, and there's kind of like a ramp up, a peak, and a decline. And it, for me now, I hear it as going up the lift, being at the top and going down, and then fucking crashing.
Cool.
So yeah, enjoy.
Mm-hmm. All right. My sweet boy.
So it's the first remix. It's the first remix. I didn't sing any of that. That was Newfound Glory.
This has like early 2000s mixed with like ska vibes, but like an EDM over. That was awesome.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
It reminded me exactly of a PlayStation game, like something like Wipeout. Uh-huh. Very colorful, very fast paced. Round a circuit and you're chasing the other cars, and you know it's a racing game. That's a journey, man. That is lovely. That is I like the vocal. I thought it was you, because you know
we have a similar timbre.
You got that vibe.
They have a song called All Down. It's All Downhill From Here, mm-hmm. and I was like, that's immediately what came to mind, mm-hmm. and so I thought it'd be fun to do a remix. So yeah, so I did two things. One, I took the song to an AI stem splitter.
Yes. You know you can do that in Logic now.
No, I did not know I could do that in Logic now. What the fuck?
Yeah. It just does it. It just works. There's a right click menu item and it will just poop them out for you.
Did he say you just right click?
Mm, you just right click.
Oh, God damn it. All right. Well, cool. I'll have to dive into that. Shit. I got some advice from my previous co-host, Aaron, from Nobody Asked for This, when I was working on another remix a while ago, to just make it fucking weird. Like, just go weird with it. That project turned into something fucking amazing. And I kept that voice in my head and did that with this. And I'm like, okay, all that's really important from this song is that one line, that one lyric. So I'm just dropping everything else and I'm just going to sample that and use it in different ways. And then I've been super inspired by this track called Ritual by John Hopkins, where he has two versions of the same track. There's one that's like a 5-minute song that's just this epic long build up, and then kind of a big, it's not like a drop, but it's because it's ambient music, but it has this, He calls it aggressive ambient, which is just so beautiful. It's such a great genre that he created himself. But then he had the one track that was like 5 or 6 minutes. And then he also has an album version of it. So it's broken up into separate tracks, but it's all one song. And it's like 25 or 30 minutes. And it's the same song, just drawn out. Like the single song is just like a truncated version of this freaking mammoth of a track. And I just love the idea of this huge buildup, kind of like a middle ground and then a decline. And so, yeah, That's I've been wanting to do something like that for this for a while, and I didn't expect that was going to be this time, but it worked out that way. And
pretty 11 out of 10.
Thank you so much, sir.
Oh, right then. So this, I was struggling with this one. Not because it was, I don't know, I just couldn't quite get where I wanted to be. And I think there's something in me that sometimes constraints work. Because this all came together.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, from soup to nuts, I think it was 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
So it's very unpolished, and there's technically, vocally. But
well, you have me worried, because that's what you did for the first one, and you knocked me out of the park. So,
Well, all I can say is I'm really happy with this. And like I said, the execution needs tightening, but I'm.
Oh, I love that, dude.
Okay.
I'm excited.
It's going to sound a little silly, but you'll hopefully it'll make sense.
Love it.
Okay, here we go.
Love silly.
When they scribble my name upon the scoreboard at the end of my life, will the good I did outweigh the bad, or does it all cancel out? I've left all stuff to the ones who I love best. Now it's all downhill from here.
Holy shit.
I've been carrying weight uphill so long I don't know what it was for. Not that it really matters now. I'm cruising at speed. Does anyone know if the brakes passed the test? Cause it's all downhill from here. And now I'm floating on marshmallow, watching the world below, waveless, dreaming. Soon you'll see me again, but not for a while, and then we'll high five forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. If I go round again, I do it all the same, but eyes off the clock. There's no pockets in shrouds, they say, so my regrets can all flush away. I've done all I can now. It's your turn, kid. Cause it's all downhill. It's been such a thrill.
And everyone's been so nice.
Yes, it's all downhill from here.
Oh my God. I literally have tears, dude.
Same. That should be the Holy scene fuck. In Love Actually of the funeral. That's the song. 60s, like, goodness, but depth. It's very, like, Yellow Submarine.
Uh-huh. Oh, I was thinking Beach Boys. Yeah, like the Beach Boys at a funeral. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I had this idea of someone at the end of their life going, yeah, you know, like I've had a good run, and it kind of ended up being like, which is where the sort of the tone of it lyrically is like, it's me as an uncle passing some sort of you know, kind of thoughts down. It's, you know, why there's it's your turn, kid, and we'll high five forever and ever and ever. It's, you know, it's that kind of thing. And I think there's something when you hit and you know, whether this is sort of, I think we can look at it as like tapping into source or something, like, you know, you're on the right track when it just flows easy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I could sit with the lyrics a bit more, you know, but like, that's, you know, that's not where most of the work needs to be done on that track. I'm really pleased with it.
Either you lied to me or you're a fucking prodigy, because 4 out of 10 execution, motherfuck, what the hell?
Oh yeah, that's no, it's when you hear it, like it's sloppy in the
ice
and stuff.
No, it's fucking amazing.
It turns out it's very difficult, and I've got a lot of props to give to like certain a cappella singers, because maintaining that's easy. It's when you get to the and because it's an odd chord progression. So it's you know, let's do musical theory for a minute. It's going from from F major to A major 7, which is unusual. And so you're doing, you've got to do like four semitones in your head. And I can't do it now. Like I can't get there because in my head, I can't do the, you know, and
you're
so
skipping too many like steps.
Yeah. Either not enough or I go a semitone or a tone too high. Yeah. And so it is very, very like when you actually, cause like, yeah, when you hear it for the first time, you're focusing, you know, there's all sorts of stuff happening, but when you actually listen to it, like it's very sloppy in the bass lines, but that's easily mitigated because, you know, what I can sit there and do and what I'd probably have to do because I'm not gifted enough as like an a cappella singer is just record each little phrase separately.
Yep, as single
and
tracks.
Stitch them together. Yeah.
Yeah.
And loop
All the bop-bada-bops and the chord changes, to do the chord changes separately and then just stitch it together and then it'll sound a bit more on point. But yeah.
Incredible, dude.
Yeah, in regards to when, agreed, when you said you believe you're on the right track when it flows quickly, right, the connection to source, have either of you seen your elusive creative genius, the TED Talk Elizabeth Gilbert gave probably 15 years ago?
Oh, yeah,
no,
I've read
Big Magic, which I really enjoyed.
Big Magic is the book that came out of the TED Talk.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's...
Yeah, yeah.
It's literally the same line of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sent it to a friend because I wanted him to shed what I felt was the idea he was carrying of
the weight.
You need to have pain to be an artist. You need to be in pain. You need to be struggling, or the art needs to come from pain. You need to suffer. I don't think he ended up reading it, which is a shame because I don't send that many books to people. So when I do, it's for a reason.
It's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe try the TED Talk. It's 17 minutes. Yeah, yeah. Maybe he'll give that a try.
Yeah.
Thank you both. Seriously, thank you for sharing yourselves with me.
Oh my God.
Our pleasure.
Yeah. So good.
And thank you for sharing you.
Yes.
Yeah.
A shining light.
It's been an absolute honor, and I can't wait to see you.
Oh my God.
Yes.
If I'm as charmed right now as you know as I have been remotely, then you know my head might explode.
Well, it might, because that's what psilocybin does.
Call back. Oh well, this has been a pleasure, and as always, correct me if I'm wrong.
Brendan, you better drive. One of us better drive. You better drive.
Oh, I mean, you're better at driving. That's what. I mean, I'm better at driving cars, probably. But
I can drive.
Is that an American joke?
No, it was a blind joke.
Partially, it was mostly a blind joke. Actually, is that better?
I can drive. I'm just not allowed to. I have driven.
Oh, I am so happy to be here for this.